One of the hardest parts of getting older is feeling like something's off in your body, but not knowing exactly what. It's not just aging. It's often your hormones, too. When they fall out of balance, everything feels off. But here's the good news. This doesn't have to be the story of your next chapter. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is an herbal formula made with science-backed ingredients designed to fine-tune your hormones by balancing estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol. It helps with common issues such as hot flashes, poor sleep, low energy, bloating, and more. With over 40,000 reviews and a bottle sold every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. A survey found 86% of women lost weight, 77% saw an improved mood, and 100% felt like themselves again. Start your next chapter feeling balanced and in control. For a limited time, get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com with code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Hello, and welcome back to our podcast. I'm Greg.
And I'm Veronica.
And this is the Wheel of Time podcast, something like that.
And this week, we'll be covering the Wheel of Time, Season 2, Episode 2, Strangers and Friends.
Oh man, it feels like forever since I've talked to you. it's been all of, you know, two whole days. I'll be honest, I didn't get a chance to watch the episode on Saturday night, but I managed to watch it on, I think, Sunday night. And I will say it didn't really disappoint. How'd you feel?
Yeah, I liked it. I did struggle with how much they sort of jumped around back and forth to the same storylines. Like, I definitely had to do a rewatch for myself, not having all that background, like, to piece it all back together. And I still feel like I have a lot of questions, but I really enjoyed the episode.
Oh, that's great. I'm glad you enjoyed it. All right. So we're gonna kind of just move through this because this time we're not doing feedback we didn't get any feedback because I am not a great, don't have a ton of time, and I didn't put up a podcast post, feedback post, until, you know, like an hour and a half ago. But anyway, I swear I'm going to do it either tonight or tomorrow morning. I swear. And if I don't, then I'll have this conversation again next time. Why don't you go ahead and give us what the Amazon summary gives us, Veronica?
It is, again, a super informative description. The two rivers youths forge new relationships while Lan tries to mend an old one.
Oh, well, thank God they let us know. You know what? The devil's in the details, and there are definitive details in there. Right. So all right, we'll just go ahead. And so where do we leave everybody? Right. Moraine was kind of a B, and Lan and Moraine were almost D. And we saw a little bit of Matt, a little bit of Rand. I was glad we got more of them this time. And then Egwene and Nynaeve were at the White Tower, and Perrin is chasing Pad and Fane. And is that, who else? Is that it?
I think that's everybody. Like we had the opener of whoever that was.
Oh, but yeah, the
dark, the bad guys.
Yeah.
Just leave it at that for now. And I guess we got a peek in at them. So
the And can you give me your general thoughts rather than not getting, I don't want to get into detailed points, but general thoughts on the episode this time. Yeah, I'll tell you what, you know what? No, we're freewheeling here. Veronica, give me three of your questions that you just went, what the hell is that?
Okay. I think if we stay really narrow, so let's like not delve outside of just this question because it'll go too much into one of my points, but
yep, no, that's fair.
Is it common for Aes Sedai to not be able to age, or was that something very specific that Leandrin had figured out, or do we not know that yet? I just wasn't sure if I missed something.
She explained it in this episode. This was the first time that it was specifically said.
And that was
stated
in general about Aes Sedai, like
about
any
Aes
of them are able to do that. Okay.
So the key being is that any Aes Sedai that you see, if they look really old, they're probably really old.
Okay. Interesting.
Okay. All right. That was question number one.
Oh no, what were my other questions?
I just sprung this on her literally as you heard it. So
the other one might get too much into, it might get a little bit too much into my point, but I guess I came across what I think it's been hard to understand the Dragon Reborn. Season one, I sort of was mostly just assuming this person is bad and only destined for bad. And saw him as one of the bad guys, sort of in with the Dark One.
Okay.
And at the end of season one, I started to realize, like, understand more about, you know, the last dragon and that his intentions were good, even though things seemed to go terribly bad. And maybe he was careless, but it wasn't to, like, he was trying to seal off the Dark One, right?
Right.
And so I guess in this episode, I was more clearly understanding that there are the Dark One and Dark Friends, that's sort of like one faction. There is the Dragon Reborn and his followers who are actually anti the Dark One. I guess it seems like that. And then the third faction is what I called women and women only, but just like the Aes Sedai thinking that, like, you know, basically the Dark One and the Dragon Reborn are bad, and the only people that can carry this forward are women as the Aes Sedai. Am I understanding sort of that breakdown right? Is it just complicated because the Dragon Reborn could kind of go either way, and there are people who are hoping he'll go one way? I don't know. I think I got a little lost there.
Okay, well, I will go ahead and be a little bit more, I will clarify it a little bit. You know the Venn diagrams, right? So imagine that there are three circles in the Venn diagram, and one of them are dragons reborn or men who can channel. One of them is Dark Friends, and one of them is literally everybody else. So they're, you can be a literally anybody else who is a man who can channel. You can be literally anybody else and an Aes Sedai. I'm sorry, and a Dark Friend. You can be, and like the Aes Sedai fall into the everybody else, right? So there's not so much factions. The intent is not there's the Dark One and the Dragon. There's like, it's not the light and the dark. And like the light is the Dragon Reborn. It's kind of the Dragon Reborn can choose one path or the other. He can support the Dark One, or he can support the light and fight the Dark One. He is destined to do so.
I think I thought last season, for much of the season, I was thinking about it as the Dragon Reborn sort of has only this one set path, which is to sort of become like corrupted. And obviously by the end of the season, I saw that Moiraine was hoping to at least use his power for good. Right. But yeah, I don't think I've really been straightening it all out until this episode, I guess, and hearing some of the ways that the Dragon Reborn was referenced and people supporting him, the way they talked about it, felt different in this episode.
Right. So I don't know that it necessarily answers anything, but I don't know. I definitely don't think it answers your question, but we will learn more as time goes on.
Yeah.
Perfect. Okay. Do you have one last one?
I feel like those were my big ones. Yeah, I feel like I have other outstanding questions, like things about the arches and all of that, but I think those are ones that I just am going to have to wait on, because I think the show is going to reveal it to us. So I think those are my two big that I just wasn't sure if I was fully understanding where everything fell out. So I think that helps me to place things better.
Okay. All right. Cool.
Oh, no. I do know what my other question was. I did have one other.
Okay, go ahead.
Pat and Fane.
Yep.
He's been traveling with Fades, correct?
Yes.
Has it been revealed that he is a dark friend and that he's been part of, like, the rest of that group that was with Ishmael? Or
what do you mean, has it been revealed?
Have we seen them together? Are they together?
So, Pat and Fane was in the room at the beginning of the first episode.
Okay, that's what I thought. And so,
yes,
yeah.
And Trollocs, okay, whom he told Perrin that he brought to the Two Rivers at Faldara when he took the Horn of Valir, he told him that he and Trollocs are the Dark One's creatures.
Okay.
So yes, he is a dark friend.
Okay, I was just making sure that I had that all straight, because there were a few like pattern of things in the Perrin storyline that I wasn't sure if I was understanding correctly, but I think making sure I had that right, I think I get it. So we can delve into it more when we go through our points.
All right, sounds good. All right, so we'll take a little break and then we'll get into our points. Give us just, you know, maybe a minute and a half, and you can listen to some wonderful things that we definitely support.
Welcome back. We hope you heard those ads about something really interesting that you're excited to purchase that we 100% endorse.
That second one, I would like that one I was super excited about. I could not tell you how excited I am about that you guys heard about those wonderful products.
Absolutely.
All right. So let's go ahead and get into our notes. Nope, not to our notes, our points. All right, Veronica, what's your first point?
My first point. Okay. Let's talk about sort of, I guess we'll just piggyback on what I was already talking about with the Dragon Reborn before we went to the break. So
okay.
I feel like a lot of things happened in this episode that were, to me, felt like kind of big reveals. And so one of those was when Moiraine was talking to Varen, is that the other Aes Sedai's name? Varen. And they had that tense moment, and then it was revealed that Varen is dedicated to the dragon, as is Moiraine. And she said that there, but then she also said it to Lan at the end of the episode. That, am I right that that's the first time we've heard her use words such as "I'm dedicated to the Dragon Reborn"? Has she said that in the past? Because that just felt like a different way of talking about it, and I was having trouble understanding. I mean, I guess she can't lie, right?
Right.
But she definitely is good at saying things in specific ways, you know, that can be misinterpreted by people. You know, just as she like had people believing Rand was dead, but she never actually said it. And so I was having a hard time understanding if that was truth, if she's dedicated to the dragon, which felt strange to me because it seems from everything that I've seen of Moiraine, she seems dedicated to sort of duty above all, and sort of her duty to see the world survive, I guess, not dedication to a specific person. And so I just found it interesting. I thought it was, you know, also interesting that Varen was talking about it that way, but more interesting to hear Moiraine talk about it that way, just because it felt not what I would have expected from her character.
Okay, so I'm gonna add a little bit, and it's what we got in the episode as well, just in a different storyline. So each of the Ajahs in the White Tower, they have a focus, and Leandrin went through and talked about all of them in reasonable detail. So like yellows are, they want to heal the sick, and grays are mediators, and you know what? It may not have been all of Leandrin. I know she talked about the yellows specifically, but in one of the, I went back and watched all the little origin videos, the animated origin videos, yeah. And the one about the Aes Sedai and all of the Ajahs, maybe that's where I'm getting my information from, but the blues were dedicated to justice and they were dedicated to a cause. The browns, which Varen is dedicated to history, to learning the lessons of the world past, so you know, so that the either would not repeat the negative ones, or they would, you know, learn and not repeat past mistakes, or at least have it recorded, right? So she and Adelaus are writing a book, yeah. History of the World Since the Breaking, or something like that. And so blues, as in Moiraine, they're dedicated to a cause, and maybe it's this cause. Maybe the causes are different from blue to blue, but each of them chose blue because they are looking to see a cause carried through. Maybe because they believe in something or they believe in whatever. But the world, the breaking happened 3,000 years ago. There have been a ton of causes. Maybe it's peace for all mankind. Maybe it's, you know, to increase the power of the White Tower. And so they go and, you know, sow dissent among kings or monarchs so that the White Tower can actually gain more power. A cause is a cause is a cause, and blues are dedicated to them. And so it does not surprise me that Moiraine has found a cause that she is dedicated to, but she's also concerned because other people don't see it her way. She wants the dragon to fight and defeat the Dark One. And other people may just believe he's a false dragon, and that she believes that the Dragon Reborn is destined to defeat the Dark One, which is why she's so desperate for him to be turned to the light and be given good guidance. And I may be letting some of my book knowledge bleed over into this, and I'm not trying to I'm not trying to spoil anything for anybody, but that's what I got. She was willing to kill a sister, an Aes Sedai sister, to protect Rand.
Yeah.
And so it does not shock me to do that, but only because I do have some previous knowledge of her Aja's cause or her Aja's purposes.
Interesting. I found it so strange at the end of season one that the plan was just to let him sort of go off.
I can see that.
And especially now that she's like, well, now I need to go find him again. It's like, well,
right.
why did you ever think, like, either he has a dangerous amount of power and or he's going to go crazy? Why did you think sort of letting him go off to disappear was a good plan anyways? I don't know.
I mean, at that point, I don't know how much of a choice she had. She couldn't physically stop him. She couldn't use the one power on him. She might have tried to talk him into, you know, Aes Sedai are well known for using their words to convince or connive. You know, the truth you hear is not necessarily the one that they're saying. So, so that's what I have so far on that.
All right. Well, that was really my main point, or my first point was just sort of the reveals of sort of more allegiances falling out and sort of what I see as three groups that people seem to fall into, which is like following the Dark One, believing the Dragon Reborn is who is going to save us from the Dark One, and believing the Dragon Reborn is not who is going to save us from that, I guess.
That's okay. I think those are good questions to have. I would say that I'm not going to say you're on the right path, because I don't know how I think I know the story, but I would not be able to tell you how this story is going to go.
Very true.
All right. So I am going to move over to the White Tower. And specifically, I'm going to move on to one of our new characters, Elaine.
Yay.
So Elaine is the daughter heir of Andor, where Andor is the country in which the Two Rivers resides. Now, Egwene doesn't know who Elaine is. She doesn't, I don't even know that she knew she was in Andor. So she froze from Andoran, or that she was an Andoran. Well, that is tough to say. I'll just say the attitude with which Egwene initially receives Elaine, and kind of the what you could see as like a haughty, privileged, entitled person. And you're like, hey, please don't block my door. Oh, I'm so glad to see that. I'm ready to live with the other novices. Oh, you're one of those. And then when she, you know, she goes in and she's like, oh, I can't believe they didn't clean the room. And she's like, And then, like, don't get me wrong, like, Elaine was a little bit self-aware that she's like, oh, you didn't just move in. My bad. And, you know, she seemed genuinely apologetic. And then the look on Egwene's face when Elaine said, you know, Cad Swan and Elena met for the first time, like they were adjacent. Now, I don't know who those people are, and I don't imagine that we're supposed to, but I imagine that they are well-known Aes Sedai, and, you know, they are people of legends.
Yeah.
So, you know, very well could be a matter of, and she's like, oh, don't you know, don't you wonder what's going to come of us? And the look that Egwene gives her is, I think, pretty comical. She's like, yeah, okay, psycho.
Yeah, they had a fun dynamic. I enjoyed it too.
But I think that Elaine really kind of built herself back up in Egwene's eyes when she was willing to take the punishment for someone who was trying to do her mother a favor. And when Shiriam went to come down on Elaine, she was just like, oh, well then, yeah, I'll take it. Oh, well, you'll be here. You'll be in my office for 3 months, feeling the switch on your shoulders. Before or after breakfast. I feel like I saw that was Egwene starting to resize her. And then their final scene together. I really do think based on what we saw here in this episode, that they will do great things together. And I'm really looking forward to seeing how that relationship blossoms, because Elaine is a bit of a straight shooter. Now, she's never necessarily, I mean, I'm not saying she never had consequences as a child, but as royalty, you don't always get the same reception as you do not royalty. We'll just say not royalty, or not even, you know, well off, or from a small village. You don't get treated the same. And but you also are taught, I mean, I'm not royalty, but I would imagine that you are taught to have that self-confidence, to have that understanding of your own worth, where Egwene is definitely suffering from, it's just so hard, and I try and I try and I try. The whole, you know, jealousy doesn't look good on you.
Yeah.
Was, I thought that was well said. And I'm not jealous. Yeah. Okay. And I say this with the kindest of intention, but so yeah, I really liked Elaine. I thought her introduction was well done, and even in that opening, like you only had maybe like 2 minutes to kind of go, oh, this rich bitch over here, and then she like started, you know, being more understanding and hopeful and all that. I thought they did really good character development throughout the episode and showing different sides of her.
Absolutely. I loved her. Like, I can't wait to see more of her. And I really felt like that it was really good casting. The actress they had playing her, I mean, I feel like the lines she had could have easily been, like, you could have disliked her more strongly off the bat for some of the things she was saying. But she was able to deliver it in such a way, and then deliver the embarrassment that she felt sort of at sticking her own foot in her mouth, I think, so well, while still, you know, being confident without being cocky, I guess.
Right.
And I just felt like the actress did a really good job of sort of balancing those two sides to her personality and coming off as still someone that I think most of us loved by the end of the episode and are excited to see more. So yeah, it was fun. I'm curious, like, as a book reader, are you satisfied with who they've chosen? Nice. Cause those are hard ones, right? When it's a beloved character, you know, there's, at least for me, whenever I'm a reader and watching something, I'm always more worried that they might ruin a character that I'm particularly fond of. And so she just, I don't know, she seemed great, but I was curious from your perspective of what you might have wanted from this character, if she fit so far.
I am satisfied. I think that I've paid much more attention to writers and directors, in more recent years. And I have found that a lot of the time an actor can deliver something, and it really is the director's fault on what take they use and how they wanted it to come across. And I'm not taking anything away from the actor. I thought she did very, very well. And I think she did exactly what you're talking about. But I also think that the director choosing to enforce that and push that, I think that it is a group effort. But yes, I think she represented the character and someone, I think by the end of it, it was obvious that we are supposed to like her. We are supposed to be like, man, she is the best.
Yeah. I hope she stays that way.
I can either confirm or deny anything.
I know.
All right. What's your next point?
I will go with a lighter point, because I feel like everything else I have left feels a little heavier. I really enjoyed Matt this episode. And especially the interaction with Matt, and it's Min, I believe, who's the seer. You know, I didn't really feel strongly about Matt's character last season. I mean, the actor was fine, but I didn't have big feelings about, you know, will this new actor be a good Matt or not? But so far, I'm really liking him. And something about the, you know, the more we're learning about this character of Matt, he reminds me of a Chandler Bing from Friends a little bit.
Like, I can see that, yeah.
He's got that charisma, but like a little goofy about it, you know? And so I just felt like that was a really fun character. He seemed, that whole scene felt so jovial between the two of them, despite the fact that they were both prisoners being held in the tower. And so I enjoyed that. I'm glad we're getting more of Min. I thought she was a really fun character. I think her, you know, seeing ability is really interesting. And trying to piece out when they show you the snippets of what she's seeing, which obviously was a pretty big deal this episode
that,
where she
that
saw.
That was definitely, yeah, that was definitely a dark point.
Yeah, so she saw Matt stab Rand, right? Is that what she saw? But it's like I said, I think last episode, you know, her visions aren't necessarily always showing something that actually happens, or at right. least might not be right, if the baby she saw Rand holding was just the baby that he saw in that vision when he was talking to Ishmael. Yeah, it leaves a lot of sort of question marks to me as to what her visions necessarily mean. But up until that sort of dark point, I really enjoyed just their interaction, and I'm excited again. Here's, you know, more of, I guess, from the title, more of these friendships that are sort of forming.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, no, like I did enjoy, I think it's Dhanal Finn. I did enjoy his performance as Matt. Barney, I can't remember his last name, but Barney, who played Matt last season, he definitely provided a kind of a darker version of the character. Even before he took the dagger from Shadar Lagoth, he was very down in the dumps and almost like depressed. And hey, you know, hey, I have a sense of obligation out of love to my sisters. You know, he's always kind of looking for the easy way out, but this Matt seems, as you say, a little bit lighter of heart. And the fact that he's locked in the White Tower, he's conducting the locking of his door and then hearing Leandrin's footsteps as she's walking away. And then immediately digging into the sweet pies or sweet rolls or whatever it's called. Sweetbreads. That's what it was.
Sweetbreads, I think.
Yeah. And then, you know, you can almost, I don't know if he did or not, but you can almost picture him whistling.
Yeah.
As he was going over to knock or not knock, but to tip over the cabinet and start his mission again. You learn patience. You might spend, you know, he's been there for what? He said 5 months last episode. I haven't touched that dagger in 6 months. I mean, so he was caught reasonably quickly after, like, he might have gotten to the tower before Egwene did, or Egwene and Nynaeve did. So, I enjoyed him as well. I enjoyed Matt, and I did like he and Min, and, you know, maybe at some point or another, they will see each other again, outside of the tower. But yeah, it was very, like, it did end on kind of that dark note, where it looked like Min was just falling over drunk, and she's just like, I also really enjoyed the fact that Matt's like, nope, I don't want to know what kind of shit's waiting for me.
Yeah, that was honestly kind of impressive that he had what would take some wisdom to be able to understand how negatively that could affect you, and that's not really something that he wanted to know.
Right.
I think this is the first time I've liked a Matt scene enough that I wanted to see more Matt.
Yeah, he
before
he was
I didn't dislike him. I just like didn't really care.
Right. Last season he was kind of a dark character. He was like, he wasn't somebody you were rooting for. He was just there. He's just kind of an asshole. And I feel like what we've seen so far, we haven't seen him be the same type of character he was last season. But we also haven't seen him interact with anybody except for Leandrin, who we know we don't like. Or at least I don't like her. And men. We will see. I'm looking forward to seeing more Matt as well.
Awesome.
Anything else?
That's it.
All right. All right. So my next point, I'm kind of up in the air because I kind of want to talk about Perrin and Elias and the final scene, or not the final scene, but the final Perrin scene, the big battle, right, at the village. Perrin in general is, he's less of a, like, I kind of felt this way, like, what you were talking about last episode, where it's like, get your wolf powers, do what you gotta do, and, you know, stop being a little bitch. Excuse me, not trying to be sexist or anything like that, but stop moping around and, you know, wondering what's happening to you and do something. I did like the fact that he came to Loyal's aid during the battle. And, you know, it was nice to see the two of them just start. I mean, Loyal looked like a super Skrull from Secret Invasion, just literally like, you know, kicked a soldier and flung them into a boat, and then the boat like the boat cracked with the force. Like, it makes you go, oh, okay, so maybe Ogier are not just builders, but they're battlers as well. That the battle scene in general. All right, so these are the people that came at the end of the very last.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Last scene of season one, where they came onto the ships and they were creating a tidal wave. And right. It looked like they were channeling to move their ships. And then we saw some, I don't know if they were gagged or they were just masked or what, but we have some very strong channelers here who just started effing people up and blowing people away. Not something we've seen outside of, Aes Sedai. They have not taken the three oaths. They have not, like, these are coordinated. This is a weapon in battle, to be used in battle, and we will use it to great effect. If our soldiers can't do the job, then, you know, our kind of like we were talking about last season, regarding the Aes Sedai, or rather, Amelisa up at Faldara, it was basically like, okay, once we can't take care of it, we let the Aes Sedai wipe the rest of them out, or excuse me, the channelers wipe the rest of them out. Now here you were talking about a relatively small village, right? Maybe a couple hundred people, maybe bigger than that, but I didn't think it was bigger than that. But it seemed like the Shinarians were like kind of holding their own against the soldiers. And I do want to see some more of the armor. I only saw kind of glimpses of it. Then the reveal that Ishmael is there, you know, looks like an advisor to whomever is in that palanquin.
That was Lady Long Nails.
yeah, but I'm going to call her X-23 from the Wolverine stuff. So, yeah, the two. I actually went back and like paused it to see, like, are those her actual nails? Oh no, those are like weapons. But then
Yeah, it's like
they were
a
already
ring
long.
or something almost.
Yeah, like they were like already long, and then she like made them longer. And oh, are they ready? Well, they'll have to
Ready
be.
for what and who
Yeah.
and
What is happening?
all the questions.
Yeah. So it reminded me very much of not Perseus, from 300, the emperor. I can't remember his name.
Yeah.
But on this giant palanquin,
Platform.
platform,
Yeah.
palanquin. I think palanquin's a word.
Yeah, I think that's it.
And basically like a throne that people are carrying around.
Yeah.
It makes me want to know more, and I'm very much excited to see more to this story. Not much answers, but for the fact that we know that, that one of the chosen, one of the Forsaken, is an advisor, it doesn't necessarily bode well for whatever their intentions are.
Yeah. And who crucified the Fade in that town? That's why I had all the questions about
Pain.
who was together. Because I was,
Oh, gotcha.
when they first got attacked by just the actual fighters from that army, I was like, oh, this is another group of people, and they're not with the Dark Friends, and they're also not with our friends, and maybe that's who crucified the Fade up on the wall. But then once I realized that they were all part of that group with Ishmael, and just wanted to confirm that I was right, that why can I not remember his name? Padden Fane was also part of that group. That means we still don't really have insight into who had that Fade like nailed to the wall.
Yeah,
Right. Okay.
absolutely. And I mean, it looked like they said they did it when it was still alive. And the fact that they're like opening up its mouth to look at all the teeth. I mean, would you not want to like do an autopsy on that thing? See like where its weak spots are, maybe? Maybe that's just
No,
me who didn't go watch, somebody be crucified.
I kept expecting that it was just gonna like come awake. So like absolutely not. I did not want to do an autopsy on it. I was like, why are you touching its teeth? Like, get away. It's gonna wake up and attack you. So no.
Okay. You that was basically my point. You have any other questions about that, or any input?
No, I mean, I totally still feel the same as just what you said, that I'm just ready for Perrin to give in to the wolf powers and just advance that. Like this episode, he was like asking the man that's helping them track,
Yeah,
who
Elias,
also has
yeah.
the, Elias, like, why are you doing this to me? And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, this weird stuff's been happening to you for much longer than you've known him. Like, maybe not the visions, but I just want him to, I don't know, I want that to advance. I didn't want them to get captured by Dark Friends. I wanted.
I'll be honest, I'm a little frustrated with Heimdall. I'm like, you could say literally anything. You could just be like, hey man, like let's go have a conversation. Let's just go talk. There's some stuff that's been happening to you. I know because it happened to me too, and I had to learn how to deal with it. I think I said this, last time. Just tell me stuff, period. Just explain, share your information. Don't be a douche.
Yeah,
Just
that's.
give me generic warnings.
And the only other thing, I guess, when we're commenting on Perrin and all this, would be I thoroughly enjoyed watching Uno fight. The whole fight scene was great. Like, it was great to see, like you said, the Ogier really owning up. But I continue to find Uno just absolutely delightful in all ways. And again, you know, another reason that the Perrin storyline I don't completely dread going back to, because we still get some fun stuff there. So
all right. Well, if you don't have anything else for that, we will have another little product break and we'll be back.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Again, I really hope you enjoyed those ads and heard about some products that you're going to take home. So
I mean, this time, nothing really resonated with me, but maybe next time.
Next time.
Maybe Amazon will be listening to my phone the next time that I say something and really focus some ads on me. All right. So what was your last point, Veronica?
I think my last point was all the sort of the big reveal with Leandrin for me. So the big scene where I do notice a pattern where Nynaeve likes to follow people and then watch them weirdly from outside the door of wherever they're at, as she did to Lan.
And not very sneakily.
She's great at following people, not so great at like the end game of that. But yeah, I mean, that was a really sad scene. Obviously, you know, we find out that, you know, they set up in the previous scene that Leandrin is, you know, much, much older than she looks. And so then you see her, you know, at first Nynaeve thinks that she is poisoning this sickly elderly gentleman in the bed. And then it comes out that she was actually trying to help him. Leandrin is furious that Nynaeve has caught her in this very vulnerable position, because what we find out is that this is her son. So even though, you know, he looks like he could be her great-grandfather, because her aging process has slowed, she's having to go through the painful experience of seeing her son age and become sick. And, you know, she's not someone who wants to have vulnerabilities, I don't think, and she's not someone who lets herself experience really any outpouring of emotion in any other way besides anger, I think. And so you know, it was really sad. It was sad that she was so angry. It was sad that even after she was able to reflect that what Nynaeve had told her was actually a real kindness to her, and I understand why in the moment, you know, she yelled at Nynaeve out of anger, because she was in so much pain at being caught in her vulnerability, and also pain at realizing that she had, you know, not been giving her son the most effective thing, and she'd been leaving him in pain thinking that she hadn't. So I could understand her sort of anger in that moment. It made me sad that, you know, when she went to go get Nynaeve later, that there was no ability within her at this point to reflect and realize that Nynaeve had done her a real kindness. It made me just feel sad for her character that she didn't have the ability to do that. I don't think she could let herself. That would again be like making herself vulnerable. So it was a big reveal, something I didn't know, you know, up until this episode. I didn't know that the Aes Sedai, you know, could even be in a scenario where they're, you know, outliving their loved ones in that way. And yeah, it was sad. It, I think, gave us insight into Leandrin. And I don't know if it made me like her more, but it gave me a lot of compassion for her.
I can see that. I can absolutely see that. I didn't have the compassion. I mean, I did in general, but I like her reactions, and you know, and I start thinking about, you know, I had never thought about an Aes Sedai having a child, and you know, if they ever take lovers, or if they ever take, who are not other Aes Sedai, if they ever take lovers, like, they're going to outlive them. they're going to have allegiance to a place that is not the White Tower. And so that, you know, that makes it difficult. I mean, outside of, I guess, borders, you can sleep with your orders, but you can't, I mean, maybe you shouldn't have a husband, you know, back home or whatever. Because it will split your loyalty. Your loyalty should be to the tower.
That's another, I guess, question that I had about it. So is this, like, she's obviously hiding it because it's a vulnerability and he's sick, but is it something she's had to hide likely all along, just that she's even had a child, full stop, because of sort of what you're describing? Like, is there, at least I guess in book lore, is there rules against them having children?
There are guidelines. I'm not going to, there are guidelines. I'm just going to say that.
Okay.
Okay. There are guidelines that are specifically stated that you can read them. But this, it's funny. Last season, Moiraine told Leandrin, "I know about the man you meet in wherever."
Oh my God. Yes.
But I absolutely was thinking it was a lover. And as someone from the Red Aja who takes no orders and, you know, is basically, I don't want to say hates men, but that's kind of the impression that they give. They're just out to hunt down men who can channel. That's almost like the greatest offense, is that at one point or another, you had a relationship with a man and you bore a child, and you are continuing to care for that child, even though they have grown sick. I don't know how elderly, but it may be the disease or the illness that is doing that to them.
Yeah.
So I thought I did enjoy that scene in the fact that it was a reveal, and man, that was a strong right cross. Maybe open-handed right cross, because that was hardcore. She got Nate, or maybe was it a backhand? I can't remember. But
yeah,
she got Nina Anyave really, really well. You're right. Anyave was absolutely giving her the answer to how to ease his suffering. But I think you're absolutely correct that she couldn't let any of her vulnerabilities, especially to this novice who she's been trying to groom. I mean, she lost all the ground that she had gained with Nynaeve. Maybe she had convinced her, but like, hey, one situation, like the words that came out of her mouth, "I will kill you. Get out of here before I do something we both regret."
Yeah.
I thought it was a pretty powerful scene. That was good.
Yeah. And it's, you know, continued that theme of, you know, last episode, Leandrin also talked explicitly about tapping into anger. And yeah, that is her approach to almost every situation we see her in, is to react in anger. It seems to be,
let your hate guide you.
Yeah. I think she sees any other path of emotion as a weakness, and
right. Yeah,
it's unfortunate for her and those around her.
Right. Okay. Well, I will go ahead and get to my last point. And I'm going to go ahead and go with Rand. Nice. And some of the things that we got to find out. Rand is in Qarhyn. He has taken a lover himself, and he is, you know, the whole Wolverine adage, you know, "I drink to forget." So Celine, who is the innkeeper or landlord or whatever, that they are kind of sort of together, but neither of them are with the person that they want to be. And sometimes that works. And that's no judgment here. Hey, you manage your emotions and your sense of being, however you can to make it through the day. But he is working at a mental hospital, and he is going and, you know, he's working with, this elderly, Karhainen, he's a Karhainen soldier, and who was a blade master like his father. And you know, he's learning about the forms from him and what they are, either what they're called or what the good reactions would be to an attack or whatever. And you can I thought that the presentation of Rand in this, like the kindness that he showed to the old soldier and the not insolence, but just the aggression that he showed towards the stereotypical shitty attendant. I thought those were like, hey, you're like, hey, you know, I'm starting to root for this guy. Before you, yeah. Like last season, he was kind of a selfish prick. But he's kind of winning me over. He's being a good person. I mean, except for the whole, you know, accidentally using side end to murder the attendant when he was apparently trying to just attack him. I'm pretty sure he killed him. Did they say that he suffered a horrible accident, but it looked to me like he used daggers of air to kill the guy.
He appeared dead to me. I don't know that we have it 100% confirmed, but yeah, that was my interpretation as well.
He looked stabbed and bloody to me. But again, it was also in the dark, so not 100% sure. I think he was shaking at the, you know, as Rand was walking away. But Rand has also got some either dreams or flashbacks. He you know, kind of comes to in one of the opening scenes, and then Egwene is on the ground and he's got the bloody sword, and so that, like, that's not great. So he's working in this hospital, he kills this guy, and then we find, or at least I found out, I didn't realize it, I didn't know it beforehand, but the reason that he has attacked this guy was to take his place so that he could get close to Loghain. And I really liked Loghain last year. When we, you know, watched the first season, I really enjoyed his character and kind of his strong moral code. You know, hey, there's always room at someone at my side. I'm not going to kill someone just because these voices are telling me to. The mental fortitude and moral fortitude that it takes to do that. I liked Loghain, and I'm starting to like Rand a little bit more. And I don't know how Rand will possibly convince Loghain to help him, even if it's just a matter of talking. But we also don't know how unstable Loghain is.
That's true. I was not expecting that either, that was the end game there for him to get in to see Loghain. So that was a big reveal.
I was definitely not expecting that, and I wish that I had. That was not something that I knew was coming, and I was like, ooh, that's awesome. But wait, what is he hoping to learn? I just don't know. So that was my last point. Rand's storyline. I liked it, and I liked the fact that, you know, he's, you know, making friends in Karhain. He is, you know, he goes to see the guards every day, and he goes into the thing. We did get more about Rand looking like an Aielman. And, you know, there was apparently an Aiel war decades ago, where the Aiel, we already watched a pregnant Aiel go and F up some soldiers. Rand's mother. Yeah.
Yeah. And that, so I guess that was the war that he's referencing, right? Is the war.
Yeah. 20 years ago.
Born in. Yeah.
I mean, it might've been, but we also don't know. We also know that Aielmen are attacked just because they're different. As from Breen Spring, where he was put up on the cage and filled with arrows. I guess he was filled with arrows and then put up in the cage. Where Matt and Rand met the Dark Friend.
Right, right. Okay.
And then Tom and Matt took him down and then buried him. Yeah. So, but Rand and his story was my last point. I again am looking forward to hearing more about that.
Same. I feel like they, in contrast to Leandrin's storyline, which is just anger. I feel like Rand, really, this whole episode was a lot of dynamic facets to his character and sort of setting up that he is both good and could, you know, trip over into bad, or, you know, what is bad, I guess. But
right, it's
accidentally
all about
killing someone, I guess, might be
a matter of your choices,
not
right?
Great.
But
yeah.
As Ishmael said, you know, what is a monster? Like, do I look evil to you? You know, do I look like a monster? It's all a matter of perspective.
Totally.
All right. So on to notes. What do you got?
I think the only thing that we haven't touched on that I had sort of big in my notes was just that Ishmael, I'm saying that correctly. You know, I thought he was the Dark One. And we, you know, very conclusively this episode, it was said that he is not. He is the lieutenant? Is that correct?
What's that?
They said he was the Dark One's lieutenant?
No, lieutenant.
Lieutenant. Okay. Gosh. Well, I for some reason I heard her pronounce it that way, and I was like,
I heard it weird too, and I was just like, okay, maybe I heard wrong, but no, yeah, lieutenant.
All right.
His top lieutenant.
Yeah, so we still have not, you know, seen the Dark One, but basically Ishmael is gathering together forces in support of the Dark One, seems to be what is happening.
Yeah. Okay, so is that all your notes?
Was, I think, the only thing that I had that was really stood out to me that we didn't touch on.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Well, I've got a bunch of small things. So Rand and his, we'll just say, violent love. When you're in pain, maybe a little bit of domination is just the cure you're looking for.
I mean, as long as everybody's okay with it, I guess.
Right. As long as Celine is like, you help me remember. And I'll help you forget. Then
yeah,
we're all good. But we also, it's funny I said domination, because we had the men's line to Matt about, oh, so it's a sex thing. That's what they want you for. like, oh, no. I mean, Landry could get into domination. All right. So Moiraine and Lan pushing Lan away over and over and over again, and just continuing to, and then at the end, you know, I thought we were in this together. I thought we were equals. And she's like, we were never equals. Do you have the sense that what she's saying, the truth that he is hearing, is the opposite of what she's saying?
That's what I wanted to believe. I think it's
that
so hard to know.
Better.
Yeah. And maybe he wasn't, you know, maybe she was the stronger one, but I think she knew he was the one who's truer of heart as far as their dedication to each other and sort of, I don't know. He's been a really stand-up guy across the board.
She also knows the depths to which she will sink in order to achieve her cause.
Totally.
And if she's like, you know, she can't, well, can't, she's not willing to say you were always better than me, because he'll argue and then he'll fight for her more. We were never equals is the thing that cuts him. This is her kicking. This is her throwing the rocks at Nymeria. And to get him away to, I think, to save him, because she is like, and that she said something about, I will transfer your bond to Alana by force if necessary, if you don't go, which to me, I'm going to force someone, or I'm going to pass your bond, your connection to me, to someone else. That's like forcing someone to, or picking someone else's spouse.
It's like forced saying, marriage, like forced, yeah, exactly, marriage, right? Yeah, it just feels,
but it's being, wrong. You're being forced by your spouse into a marriage with someone else.
I also don't understand how she would do that if
she's cut off.
If the bond isn't active right now and she's cut off. I mean, I guess, you know, maybe the other can.
Maybe Alana could bond him.
Yeah, maybe. But it just seemed.
Yeah, I don't know.
I just felt sad for him. And like, I agree. I think most of what she was saying was to get him to leave. But it's just sad. But yeah, if he's going back to the White Tower, I do feel placated that if that's where he's going, that he'll be close to Nynaeve. And I would like to see them back in each other's presence.
Nynaeve's having, you know, having her own struggles.
Yeah. So she's going to need land there.
Let me see. So yeah, the Moiraine, where is Moiraine going?
I don't, to the docks.
She was going to the docks, but then at the end, I thought she was going, because they were collectively going to the tower, and Alana came from the tower.
Right. So she kept saying to, I keep forgetting her friend's name, Varen. Varen. They both kept saying, we're all going to the White Tower, but it seemed like they were basically speaking almost in, trying to speak in code to one another, like feeling it out of like, are we going to the White Tower? Aren't we? That's how I was sort of interpreting it. Like, it just seems strange. And so, yeah, it did seem like that Lan is going to the White Tower with Alana, but that Varen and Moiraine are
going somewhere else.
Going somewhere else to seek, I think, to try to seek out Rand.
Go find Rand?
I think that's what I got.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Next note is the whole vision that Perrin had of the family eating dinner and then being attacked. The fact that he didn't recognize that he walked into a slaughterhouse.
Yeah.
And then when he finally came to, he's just like, what is going on? He's like talking to the people, and that was pretty brutal.
Yeah.
I'm kind of glad they didn't show more of it. I feel like Game of Thrones would have, and
yeah, I was glad it was just flies.
Yeah, it was still gross, but and then that giant fish, the lionfish that Loyal was talking about. I was like, oh, that is a big ass fish. All right, so what else do I got? We talked about Elaine and Egwene.
Nynaeve, I guess we didn't really touch that much, just on, you know, basically her hearing only part of what Egwene was saying through the door, and feeling very, very alone, and then being forced to go do the arches.
The arches is actually, that was the list, the last thing, the arches. So
yeah,
she's going to go through the arches in order to become accepted.
Yeah.
I guess that's something that we also did not talk about. I can't remember if it was last episode or this episode, but so there are three levels of Aes Sedai personnel. There are novices, there are accepted, who was the girl who was healing the little girl with Breakbone fever, and then there are Aes Sedai, and there are possibly years between achieving one and achieving the other.
Okay. So they are trying to get her through things faster because they need strong fighters in their ranks, essentially.
But it seems like Leandrin is pushing that to be the case, even though she has not made nearly the advances that Egwene has, or any of the other novices. So I would imagine that with becoming an accepted, Nynaeve is going to suffer being alone even more. Kind of like somebody who has toiled for, a decade in order to become accepted. This girl's been here for 5 months and has yet to actually do anything worthwhile, but she's going to go through the arches and be treated with the same, be given the same responsibilities as someone who's toiled for years or decades. The Nynaeve's secret passage out of the tower, I thought that was a
All
little
right.
silly. Like, she was not very stealthy at all. She left the door to the secret passage open. Like, what are you doing? Like,
She is a master tracker. I don't know what you're talking about. She's
it's
stealthy like.
it was really, I was I, it very much made me go, come on. Like, you're going to a place, you just watched her open up a secret door, and then you're going to leave the secret door open. What? Come on. And then she's wearing a white dress where you stick out like a sore thumb because everybody else is at least in dark colors, if not dirty themselves. Come on. But so that was the last of my notes.
Yeah, I think that's got mine too.
All right. Well, since this time, as I said before, we're not doing news until we won't do news until after episode 3, and then we'll also do some news on, or we'll do some we'll get we'll compile all the listener feedback and feed it back. But that's our show. Thanks for listening, everybody. If you'd like to write in or record a message and send it in, you can email it to talk@podcastica.com, and we can and check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/podcastica.
And we're also on Twitter at Podcastica, which is now X. It's not even Twitter, is it?
Oh yeah, now we're now so now on X. Like,
You
we're
just
now on
got
X.
X'd, punk. Sorry. All right. And, go check out all those sources to find out what's going on Podcastica. We are not going to relist it all because we just talked to you guys 2 days ago about it. But check it out. There's a lot of exciting other shows hitting the feed from Podcastica.
Yeah, a lot of good stuff. But White Lotus season 2 starting this week, I think.
Woohoo!
Next time on this podcast, Wheel of Time season 2, episode 3, What Might Be. Thanks for listening, everybody.
All right, that's our show, and
Let the dragon ride again on the winds of time. Thanks for listening.
Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to fling your favorite fishing rod around. And here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance covers your boat and your belongings. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to high-five someone. But not while you're holding your fishing rod. That's a prized possession. So hold on tight with both hands and keep it covered through boat insurance. Get more with GEICO.